You're listening to Fanboy Smackdown, episode 54, No Country for Old Men.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
This is episode number 52 of the Fanboy Smackdown podcast. 54. Good God. Taking a step back in time.
Don't want to let go of March.
No, I don't. I want to hang on as long as I can. Well, you know, at the end of March is when I get a little older, so just trying to squeak as much time out as I can. Tonight, we're going to talk about No Country for Old Men, which I guess is even more funny that I'm talking about getting older.
How topical.
Yes. And I'm drinking scotch tonight in honor of tea. I should have drank it last week, but just kind of spaced. Yet having tea on was a lot of fun.
I may pop open a Bud Light, but I'm sure that's going to be a bad idea. So.
That's all right. Drinking on this podcast is, you know, it's weird. This has been the most sober the podcast. This last month, since you have joined, this has been the most sober this podcast has been.
Which is weird because I love to drink.
Yeah.
I love to podcast and drink.
Well, we had beer the first night you were over, and that was it.
We had like one each.
Yeah. And now it's, you know, the last couple have been kind of dry. Mm. No more. You know, I'm not a big drinker. And what was funny was when I started podcasting, I started drinking a lot more. And, it's all part of the heritage.
Yeah, oddly enough, so did I.
So
I tend to sound like an idiot when I'm sober, so the alcohol kind of...
The alcohol helps, and the editing helps.
Yeah, the editing also. Probably more so the editing.
Yeah, you know, I think the IQ, the perceived IQ of this program has probably jumped a good 20 to 30 points since you started editing the shows. I know my ums and uhs have seemed to have just gone away.
Well, when people meet me in person now, they're like, hey, you sound a lot different in person. And I know that they're really just telling me that I sound like an idiot.
But you just start mumbling.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mumble on the podcast. They're kind of used to that.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That is true. So, yeah, last week was a ton of fun. It was really cool having tea on.
I love tea.
Tea is a great guy. What's really cool is I've already gotten some feedback, and you know we released the episode a little bit late this week for the last episode, and I mean we've only had it released for a couple hours now by the time we're recording this, and I've already started getting some feedback already, and it's really great.
That's
people
a fast
love tea.
Turnaround time.
Yeah, a couple of people hit me on Twitter already, and somebody even pinged me on Skype just saying they've loved the episode. Tea is great, and you know we bust his chops about all the movie references he throws out, and I had some fun with that in the show notes. But I mean, the guy loves movies. You know, you can't get around the fact that he does love movies, and he knows what he's talking about. He's not just talking out of his ass. He really has a love for movies. I wish we could get him on the show every week just to BS with him.
That guy has so much energy.
Yeah. We would totally kill one evening a week for him though, because he loves to talk, man. We get him on here, we capitalize his time. And I understand you are now you're listening to more of Moravi.
Oh, I am. Actually, I didn't think I was going to get hooked on it, but this morning I got out of the shower and I was like late for work and I was like, oh, I got to get more of this. So I had to download and burn a CD worth of stuff so I could listen to it on my way to work.
Cool.
It's bad. I'm addicted.
Yeah, I remember when I listened to it the first time, it had been completely released, or it was in process of being released when I started listening to it. And T was the first, there are like three guys that can claim different variations on the first podcast audiobook. Scott Sigler can claim the first book complete. I think his claim is the first book that was podcast only. And I think T's is the first podcast. I think his was the first novel to be podcast. And I don't remember if he finished. I don't think he finished first, but I think he was like the first one to release one. But these guys all released within like a month and a half or 2 months from each other. I mean, they all did it almost at the same time. And I think the other one was Mark John Jeffries. I think that's his name. I could be very wrong. Maybe there's not a John in there. I think it was Mark Jeffries.
I haven't met those other
anyway,
guys.
No.
They don't exist as far as I'm concerned.
No. No. T exists because we have met him. We have drank with him.
We have smoked cigars with him. Yes.
Well, I don't smoke cigars, but I did drink scotch with him. Very good scotch at that. It was some mighty fine stuff. We've had a great time with T, and I can't wait to get him back. Hopefully when his new Billabub Battings book comes out and rocks the charts. Mm-hmm. And speaking,
everybody remember August 8th.
August 8th, yes. And we will hammer that into your heads over the next couple of months. Yep. You will not be able to forget it. real quick, one more thing on Scott Sigler. His book, Infected, comes out on April 1st, which, depending on when you're listening to this episode, is either, hopefully, if everything goes right, it'll be the day after this episode releases. So if you're listening to this episode, you should really seriously think about getting to the bookstore and picking yourself up a copy of Infected. I listened to Infection, which is what it was when it was podcast the first time, and I've got like the first four or five podcasts of his current incarnation of it, Infected. It had to go through a name change because of movie rights and stuff like that. But Scott is one of those guys who is doing it. He's doing it right. And for Scott to be successful, it elevates the whole podcast community. It really validates podcasting as a medium and makes us all, it gives us all a little more validation as a real medium in the eyes of publishing. Which, it may not seem like anything for a movie podcast, but, if we do this for a while, who knows, we could come up with like a movie book, or something like that. So, good God, I know. Between Darren's reviews alone, he could probably collect those all and publish them. He is a machine, and he's doing a great job with his reviews. Really good stuff.
And then, if you've noticed, this is to the audience, not you, Tony, I'm sure you've noticed.
I have noticed.
We've got a new reviewer that is putting out stuff on the site, Jake.
Jake Moore. He is a young guy. He's talked to him at Fear the Con. I'd met him once or twice before. Good guy, very bright, and writes good review.
Very not 18.
Yeah, very articulate. Sitting down with him, talking to him, he does not come across as 18, and not at all. Not at all. I was really stunned by how well written and how well thought out the review, the first review he posted for us. It was kind of funny that this is the first time we have had, I think this is the first time, because I don't think any of Trampas's review, well, we haven't posted any of the text of them, so no, I know for sure. This is the first time that we have had the same movie reviewed twice in text on the website.
Really?
By two different reviewers. Yeah, Funny Games, Darren did the review, and then a couple of days later, we released Jake's review. They both reviewed the movie. They both did a great job. They had different takes on it, and I think that's awesome. And hopefully we'll see even more of that. I'm all for, having more reviewers, because it's more content. It drives more people to the site. Hopefully get a few more people listening to the podcast. I'm very cool with that. And this scotch is good.
I'm jealous.
I'm getting gabby.
All right, well, let's channel your gabbiness.
I'm channeling tea.
No country.
Yes, let's talk about
channeling.
I'm channeling tea. The scotch is making me channel tea.
That's great. All right, let's roll in the new
I'm not going to start talking with an English accent though. No Country for Old Men. I saw this movie as part of the Best Picture Showcase that I saw just before Oscar Day. That five movie marathon, it won Best Picture this year.
Yes, it did. I saw it last night. So
right, and you saw it on DVD.
I did,
as opposed to in theater.
I didn't watch any of the special features, though. I guess I probably should have.
I'm actually finding myself not watching special features as much anymore.
Really?
It's weird.
Why?
I think it's just time.
Yeah.
Because
I watched it. I watched it pretty late last night, and it finished like, I don't know, maybe 11:30 or midnight. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I mean, with watching movies for the podcast and having the little ones, especially movies like a movie like No Country for Old Men, I have to wait until the kids go to bed. This is not a movie that kids need to be anywhere near.
It's not a kid's movie.
You don't even want them in the same room when this is on, you know. It's a pretty rough flick.
It's not overly violent, but the violence is brutal.
Yes, it is. It's brutal, and it's very quick, and sometimes it comes out of nowhere. I mean, it's really not projected very much. When it hits, and it hits hard. Mm-hmm. There's a few times where there could have been a couple of more scenes that I almost would have expected the violence, but that didn't show up, which is interesting.
Okay. So what'd you think?
Overall, I thought it was a really good flick. I will preface that by saying I saw 5 movies that day. Three movies were very linear and standard as far as they had very much a I guess linear, but also had a beginning, middle, and end that was very American. Very much something that you can definitely call a beginning, middle, and end without much ambiguity.
Right.
The two movies that were exceptions to that were There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men. Because the ending of No Country for Old Men is a little bit interesting.
Yes.
And
the ending yes.
Yeah. And we'll get there. But the ending of it left me a little cold when I finished the movie. And I think
I agree.
And I think part of that though is also that I saw 4 other movies that day. And maybe
because I've got the same feeling when I finished the movie. And I didn't see 4 other movies yesterday.
Now,
I only watched that.
Now, what's interesting for me is when I was done with those 5 movies, I could see that this movie was really good. But I was kind of scratching my head as to why it was considered a nominee for Best Picture. Remember, at the time, this was Saturday. The Oscars were on Sunday. Didn't know what movie was going to be the Best Picture. Looking at the movies and still scratching my head with it, this movie, I think, was one of the two movies that I thought would be the Best Picture.
Really?
Yeah. It was up between this and Atonement.
See, now I'm kind of at a disadvantage because the only 2 of the Oscar nominees I saw, well, I mean, I guess I've seen at this point,
right,
is No Country and Michael Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, they're both movies that we're reviewing. So
right. Right. Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder why I watched them. And I mean, I got to be honest with you. I thought Michael Clayton was a better movie. I guess let me go ahead and qualify that.
Sure.
I never got a sense with Michael Clayton. I kind of got a sense that the story was moving along at a consistent clip.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie, I don't know. It just kind of felt really jerky to me. The creepy guy. What's his name? Hold on. I have IMDb open.
Anton.
Yeah, Anton or Javier Bardem.
Javier Bardem. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy was really creepy.
Yes, he was.
Really cool, but there wasn't really much to him beyond the creepiness.
You know, I didn't know what this movie was going to be about going into it, and let's kind of start from the beginning.
Yeah, I guess we should kind of
let's synopsis. Take it back a step. I didn't know what this movie was going into it. Didn't really have a clue. I knew it was going to be. I knew I was in for something violent and that was getting really good reviews, but I really didn't know much about it other than that. I had no knowledge of the story. I know that it's a book and that it's apparently a book that people feel very strongly about.
Mm-hmm. I'm in the same boat with you, right? Right. At this point, I'm in the same boat with
yeah.
you.
Now, once the movie started, we have the scene where somebody gets killed by the guy with the thing.
With that little air can thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about that too much because it does get revealed very nicely in the movie exactly what's going on there. And I think it actually does play into the whole theme of the movie. But I didn't know if I was watching a science fiction movie, a horror movie, or what. I was really confused at the beginning.
I think from the beginning, what was like kind of flashing in my brain as the huge big neon sign was Western. Hardcore Western.
Yeah. Because,
I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, the man was born to play a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he has the speech pattern down for what I expect from kind of a backwoods
Texas Western. Sheriff.
Yeah, Texas Sheriff. Yeah, yeah. He's got that whole dialect down.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, it's just as soon as it opened, it was like, I had, just like you, I had no kind of pre-knowledge for the movie. And going in, it's like, boom, he starts his opening narration. I'm like, oh, it's a Western.
Right. And the narration, and I was a little worried when I started, when it started with narration. Movies that start with narration always worry me a little bit. I have that bias. It's just me. I always have a bias that I worry if a movie feels that it has to have narration.
Because you think that they're not skilled enough to deliver the information any other way?
Either that they're not skilled enough to deliver it any other way, or that they feel pressed for time and have to shove something in my face just to get it to me.
Right.
Because they're
kind of cramming that exposition in.
Right. Exactly. So I was a little bit worried about it. For this, after seeing the movie and after digesting it, you need to pay attention. You need to pay attention to everything. I get that after the fact. The opening monologue, the voiceover, it's very important, and it plays into the whole movie and plays into the theme of the movie. What I found most interesting about this movie is that the characters that are featured most prominently in the film are not really who the story is about. Which is
correct.
Weird. It's unusual.
Yes.
And it's just different. I think, and what I think is really great is that it's different, and it was different and brutal and violent and was still a really well put together movie. And I think that's, I mean, for me, that's why I was saying that I thought this movie was one of the two movies that I would have put out there as Best Picture. Now, as far as the story goes, and to kind of give people a review of what they'd be in for by going to see the movie, because this is a movie that I cannot recommend to everyone.
I want to fall on that boat, too. And I felt okay about the movie, but mm-hmm. It wasn't one of those movies that kind of reached out and grabbed me.
No, and it's not an easy movie to watch. There's some pretty rough stuff in there at a few mm-hmm. spots.
But it's weird that it alternates. It, like, does this complete 180, like, manic depressive. It'll be really rough and violent for like maybe, I don't know, 2 minutes, and then it'll go to something real slow.
Yes.
And kind of thought provoking. And then that's the way it'll be for another 10 minutes, and then they'll blindside you with something.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, just insane action sequences that last a long time mm-hmm. that border on the suspense is so thick that it almost borders on something you'd see in like a horror movie.
Right.
And I think a lot of that comes from the character Anton, because right. he is almost, I mean, he is like a Mike Myers, you know, Jason Voorhees type character. He just mm-hmm. keeps coming. He
right.
is relentless. He is brutal. And he just, you know, he's coming. You know he's going to show back up.
And none of it is over the top Hollywood violence.
No,
it's very brutal. It's very real.
Yes,
like they both get shot. Their bullets pouring out of them, and they're both trying to like stay conscious and stuff like that. You get a sense of real, like biting realism.
Yes,
with the violence.
Yeah, the
that's kind of disturbing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Now, as far as the story goes, Llewellyn Moss, the character played by
Josh Brolin,
who is great. He yes. did a fantastic job in this movie.
He does an excellent job. He does the hick cowboy
yeah.
down to a T. That guy, kudos to that guy.
Yeah, when they were handing out nominations, I for my money, I felt that Josh Brolin was more worthy of an award than Javier Bardem was.
Yes, I agree.
Javier Bardem was just creepy and relentless, which...
His creepiness kind of came from his accent, too.
His accent and his haircut.
yeah, that haircut was weird. Did you read that quote where he's like, great, now that I have this haircut, I'm not going to get laid for like 2 months.
That's awesome. And, you know, I can see that.
Yeah.
Well, and the movie is set in, was it in the early 80s?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? So it's, I mean, yeah. And what's interesting is that it is a period piece. This is not something that's set in the modern day. And it really plays into it because the technology, it does matter because you don't have cell phones. And that's really the biggest thing. And they're able to, I mean, being that they're in Texas, they're able to slip across the Mexican border back and forth really easily, which in the mid-80s, honestly, they probably could have done that. I really don't see that as a problem. Now, what the story is, though, is Llewellyn Moss is out hunting and stumbles across... it's where he finds the wounded dog, right?
Yeah, he sees the wounded dog, and then he kind of backtracks.
Right.
And he finds the kind of the drug deal gone south.
Yeah.
All these dead drug runners, and he kind of follows their back trail a bit, and then stumbles on $2 million.
And one guy's still alive.
Yeah, yeah. And there's one guy in the kind of firefight that's still alive.
Yeah, he survived the firefight, but he's seriously wounded, and he wants water. And Llewellyn tells him, look, buddy, I don't have any water. Yeah. And he leaves him. You know, he could have done the merciful death thing, but he just leaves the guy. Mm-hmm. He takes the money and leaves. And he gets back to his trailer, hides the money, and when he gets into bed, he's laying there and he starts thinking about it. And
yeah,
one of the interesting things about the character is he has a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides to do the right thing and go back and give the guy some water. And that's pretty much where things go to hell.
Yeah,
and
that did not seem to be a good move.
You watch that and say, you know, I don't think I would do that. And then you find out that it probably wasn't the winning move for him.
Right.
The rest of the movie for Llewellyn and Anton becomes a chase.
Yeah, this kind of cat and mouse game.
Yeah.
Anton's hunting him.
Anton's hunting him. And he's just trying to get away. Anton has been hired by principals within the drug deal to recover the money and or drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Probably both, from the way it sounded. And Anton pretty much has no bones about going through anybody who gets in his way.
Yeah, he kills a lot of people.
He kills a lot of people. The opening sequence of the movie, he shows his brutality and just what he is willing to do, the sacrifice he's willing to make to his own body to get out of situations and to continue on in whatever task he is doing. It's something that I won't describe because you pretty much have to see it. And if you make it through the first 5 minutes of this movie, you got a really good idea what you're in for.
It's a lot of repeat of that first kind of shock grabs you. And then they kind of repeat that whole thing in different situations.
Yes. Yes. And you really get the idea that, if you can handle the first 5 minutes and you're not, you know, ready to leave, because it does get a little worse than that. But, I mean, that's kind of the level of intensity and brutality that you see throughout the rest of the movie. So, at one point, though, we get Tommy Lee Jones' character in on all of this, and he is the local sheriff. Mm-hmm. They find the bodies. They find a body, which leads them to more bodies. And
right.
He is able to work back he's able to backtrack things just as quickly as Llewellyn did Anton did. His biggest difference was he just didn't know that he had to look for somebody until hours later. So he's hours behind the game. And so it is a cat and mouse and dog almost, because you also have the police now involved in this, and the police, you know, they're looking to find out who killed these people. So they're basically after Anton, but at the same time, they're really hunting Llewellyn because Llewellyn is an amateur at this.
Right.
He's not proficient in hiding within society. Now we do find out that Llewellyn has a little bit of Rambo in him. he was formerly a Vietnam veteran, and I think he was Special Forces. Am I remembering that right?
He does some clever things, some things that like go beyond your typical average Joe.
Well, and they didn't introduce it till later, but at one point they do kind of tell you that he was in the military in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and that it kind of justified some of the things we were seeing him do.
Right.
Some of the cleverness and how comfortable he was with weaponry and things like that. It was a little bit, at first it would, you almost had the feeling of, okay, I can understand somebody being desperate and picking up a gun and, you know, aiming blindly and starting shooting at somebody. Right. But he wasn't doing that. He seemed to be very comfortable with the weapons and things like that. Come to find out that he was former military. So it all jibed the story.
Yeah, I kind of just accepted it just because he was a cowboy. Like, he had the rifles, kind of that whole backwoods hick thing. Like, he the first scene that you see him and he's hunting.
Right.
So it's not like he's completely unaccustomed to the weapons.
That's
like,
true. That's true.
The only time he's ever used them was in the military. It's like something that he deals with day in, day out.
Yeah. Yeah. So really the rest of the movie is the cat and mouse. We do end up seeing, I think the guy's name is Steven Root. He's the guy that hires Anton to go after the money, the guy in the office building. At another point, he also hires Woody Harrelson to go after him.
Yeah, which is Woody Harrelson in this movie, yeah.
Which was, I mean, for me, I didn't know Woody Harrelson was in this movie. So I guess this is a little bit of a spoiler, because if you're as unfamiliar as it as I guess we were, Woody Harrelson shows up, and it was kind of a surprise, but I thought he did a fantastic job in the role that he played also.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good.
The acting in this movie was fantastic. The direction was really good. I can't just say that it was all acting, because the acting was consistently good across everyone. So that, I mean, you have to chalk that up to direction. Then again, it was Coen Brothers, so they've made a couple of really good movies. You know, they tend to know what to do behind the camera. All in all, I thought this was a really great movie. I do have trouble, though, recommending it to a broad audience. It's really rough, and to people looking for straightforward answers and a straightforward movie, this movie has enough action and violence in it that you would think that a typical action movie person, a person that would like a movie like Predator or Commando or Terminator or something like that, might enjoy this movie. But there's a lot more going on in this movie than the violence and the action. Now, there's a lot of really good, really well done violence and action, but there's a lot more going on in this movie than that. And I think that in the end, somebody who is just expecting that is going to be really disappointed in this movie.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with it. I have a hard time recommending it to people because, and I'm not going to go into a spoiler here,
mm-hmm.
but the ending was killer for me. And we'll get more into this.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about this after we go to a break, because
I did not enjoy the ending to the movie.
I can see that. I can appreciate that. I really can. And I felt the same way when I walked out of the theater from seeing this one. It took me a day or two before it really sunk in, and thinking about the movie and digesting it, mm-hmm. that I really appreciated this movie. And
really?
And I will see this movie again, because I think there's a lot more going on than I saw the first time. I think this one is worth multiple viewings. Because I really think this is a movie that you have to get to the end to see what the point of it was, to then go back and really see it. It's not like a twist ending or anything. It's not like a Sixth Sense kind of thing where, you know, it's this big reveal.
No, I was actually kind of expecting a big reveal.
Yeah, and expecting that, you will be disappointed.
Yep.
Yeah, you will be disappointed. So, I think we're probably at a good point to stop and get into the more spoilery stuff.
Yeah.
Because we can gush on the good parts and we can beat on the bad parts, but I think the real in-depth discussion is going to have to happen after we lift the spoiler veil.
Because
I think that's where the real discussion is going to take place with this one.
Totally agree.
So let's take a quick one and we will be right back.
They tap into your bloodstream like tiny little vampires. They hack into your nervous system like you were a walking computer network built just for them. They flood your body with chemicals that cause fear, paranoia, and psychotic rage. It's a disease that thinks. It's a disease that talks. And if you're lucky, you die before it becomes a disease that walks. On April Fool's Day, experience the horror thriller novel Infected, the major hardcover release from number one best-selling author Scott Sigler, creator of the free podcast novels Earthcore, Ancestor, and Nocturnal, available April 1st, online and in bookstores everywhere. Free audio chapters of Infected are available at scottsigler.com and infectednovel.com. The disease kills you slowly if the cure doesn't kill you first.
Okay, we're back, and I understand you now have a drink as well.
I do, yes. You know what? I started drinking Bud Light out of the aluminum cans, and you know it's not bad.
Really?
I'm usually just a bottle man myself, but on a camping trip we went on last weekend, I didn't want to look at the bottles.
Sure.
And they're kind of growing on me.
Oh, man. You know, for beer snobs, you are actually regressing.
I know. Next step after this, hands.
Yeah. So are you doing like the aluminum bottles then, or?
Yeah, like the aluminum 16-ounce okay. bottles.
Gotcha.
Like the party ones that sure. they do for Mardi Gras and stuff.
Sure. Yeah, the final step will be the
yeah.
the aluminum cans. And then start, you know, backstepping into natural light and Milwaukee's no. best. And
that's no good. The beast.
Oh, man.
Bad college memories.
All right. So, No Country for Old Men, the spoilery version.
I don't even know where to begin.
I do. The freaking gun that he used. Whoa. Yeah,
what was wrong with just a regular gun?
You know, I think that was actually a statement.
Really?
I think so. I really think it is. Because, and I think it goes to show the character of Anton that everything he did was a lot more calculating than it seemed. He seemed like he was just a blunt instrument.
Uh-huh.
But I think he felt like he was more. I think he had a very philosophical outlook on himself.
And yeah, I can't disagree with that. I mean, you can see that in the scenes where he's talking to like that gas station attendant.
Exactly.
And then to
where he plays Two-Face with her.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, exactly. After that scene, I'm watching that scene and thinking, boy, Christopher Nolan has to be just jumping up and down screaming, wishing that he had shot Two-Face as the next villain instead of Joker. Because this guy is he's doing a Two-Face. You know, he's throwing a quarter out there and saying, call it, you know? And just that scene right there, I mean, that just screamed Batman and the character Two-Face.
Yeah, definitely.
But, and what's really interesting, and the character, this is a very interesting character as far as the movie goes, but it's not a unique character because you know who the character really reminded me of? It's the guy from Serenity. The guy that was chasing them in Serenity.
Jubal Early?
Not Jubal. The guy without a name in the movie Serenity.
Oh, the movie.
In the movie.
Right. I was thinking Firefly. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're thinking Firefly.
Yeah.
They kind of gave him a title. It wasn't even a name. It was a title.
He's the agent.
Something like that. It was that guy. It really harkened back to that type of character. Mm-hmm. That he had a purpose and he knew what it was and he was damn good at it. And
yeah, I can't disagree with that. That he was more of a, I mean, as funny as it sounds, he was a tool.
Yeah. Yeah. I would never call him that to his face, though.
No.
He would use that gun thing on you.
He would air gun my face. That would be not good.
No. But what I meant by saying that, I think that was kind of his, that spoke to his character. They described, at one point, Tommy Lee Jones describes using a device like that, and that's how they kill cattle.
Right.
It's basically a bullet with, and since this is behind the spoiler, we'll talk about it. And if you've seen the movie, you know exactly what it is. For anybody who may not have seen the movie, what this is he carries around a canister of compressed air with a hose attached to it and a little device. And he'll walk up to people, push it against their forehead, hit a button, and they fall over dead. With a hole in their forehead. He also uses this device at various times in the movie to blow through locks. He'll put it right
to... He does that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll hold it right up to the keyhole of a lock and just blast the keyhole straight through the lock. At one point, Tommy Lee Jones describes this as a method that they use to kill cattle. Presumably because it's basically using a bullet to enter and then retract so you don't lose the bullet, and all you're really expending is compressed air. You know, so it's very cheap, very quick, very brutal, and very inexpensive. And I honestly think that the character Anton kind of looks at everybody else's cattle. I
can't disagree with you.
I think his respect for humanity, I don't think he really respects humanity. I think he just looks at everyone else as cattle, as a lower life form.
You can see that definitely evidenced by the fact that he just goes around killing.
Yeah.
He needs to get somewhere, he just kills someone and takes their car.
Right.
Well, time for a new car, so he kills somebody else and takes their car.
Exactly. I mean, it would be like, I mean, you know, and it's not quite the same, but it's like walking through an apple orchard and I'm hungry, so I pick an apple off a tree and eat it without remorse. Because it's just an apple, you know. If I'm hungry and I'm in a field of cattle, and I know what I'm doing, I butcher a cow and cook it up and eat it. I don't think about it. I'm hungry. I need some place to go. I kill the person driving the car and take their car, you know. I think that the weapon and description of it after the fact kind of went to explain that about the character.
More his, right. Like, that kind of exposition about the weapon was more...
It was exposition about Anton more than the weapon.
It was more of a character summary.
Yes.
And it was, yeah, exactly.
And seeing this is what makes this movie difficult to digest. Because the information you're given, because I really think you are given all the information to understand what the movie's about, but none of it's straightforward. None of it is laid out in front of you.
That was the hardest part for me, because the three main characters in this story are never in the same room at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But each one of their individual stories kind of impacts and defines the others.
Yes.
It's a cool storytelling device. It just wasn't working for me. I prefer my stories to be more straightforward than that.
Sure. Absolutely. That's
more of a preference thing, though.
Right. I mean, that's another reason I can't recommend it to everyone. Some people just want to be entertained by movies, and that's fine. That's what movies are for. They're an entertainment medium. This movie is not strictly an entertainment. I think there's a lot. It's trying to say a lot. Just by the title of the movie alone, is a statement. And I think really the only thing I would amend to the statement is adding the word anymore at the end of it, because
I can't disagree with it.
It really feels like this was a movie that was about maturing and growing up and entering reality. And that's kind of what I got from it. It's weird. And it is digging deep into this movie, but that's kind of what I got out of it. And a lot of it comes from the voiceover at the beginning. And looking at this movie, for me, this movie was about Tommy Lee Jones. It's really about him. The other guys,
I can't disagree with that.
The other guys are framing
his own
Change.
Coming to terms. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's and it's not. I'm trying to relate this to another story, and I'm struggling with a really good example because it's so out of left field and curved balled that
really right. It's so.
It's not straight. It's not a straight path. You have to kind of follow the path a little bit to get to where it's going. And you know, it starts with the voiceover, and it starts with the description of how it used to be, how these guys didn't have guns in some cases. You know, you had sheriffs who didn't never carry guns, and how they were able to do just fine. But now it's not so much that way anymore.
You know what? I almost liken this to a Catcher in the Rye type thing.
Yeah. It's coming of age.
Yeah, exactly.
It is.
Where Holt Caulfield's going on about, like, he doesn't ever come out and say it sucks getting older because, like, the era has passed. But he gives all these things, and then ultimately he just comes to the final conclusion. He's like, you know what? I don't want to force anybody else to grow up because growing up sucks.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do it.
Yep.
And then that's kind of what that's the exact conclusion Tommy Lee Jones comes to in the end. He's like, you know what? This isn't the country for me anymore. The old ways that I used to love, the old ways that I grew up with, all the stuff that I knew, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's really interesting is, I mean, this is the same thing that, you know, you go through from adolescence to teenager to adult. And I think Catcher in the Rye is probably the best example because it does framework all these things that are really rough and hard to deal with and
right and
just not something you're not equipped to deal with. And for not being equipped to deal with it, he does a really good job dealing with it. But then he realizes this is not the world he wants to live in.
Yeah, exactly.
He sees himself becoming a fish out of water.
And I think that kind of transition, because in the beginning he's talking about, well, I come from this huge long line of lawmen and like lawmen runs in my blood and I've been a sheriff for 25 years and my dad was a sheriff while I was a sheriff at the same time. So it's, you don't get the sense that like he's just never been good at it. He's always been good at it.
Yeah.
It's just that he can't adapt to this kind of changing epoch in the world. And
right.
It's sad because it's not just him and it's not just that situation.
And it's not just 1980. Life. And it's not just 1980. Yeah. You can also make parallels with today and people who are in their 50s and, you know, they're being replaced by people in their 20s because they can use technology better. It's not that they don't have the same experience. They're not as good at what they do, but things are moving faster now because of what's available through technology. And if that person would have been able to keep up, they would have succeeded. They would have been better than the young kid. But that's not the world that they know, and that's not the world that they want to know. So now it's the time to just retire. And I think that's probably another good example. These are the kids and these are what they're capable of doing. And you know what? If I lived that life and if I understood the weapons that they used and the tracking methods they used, I would totally be able to kick their asses and catch Anton and save Llewellyn and get the money back and all of this stuff. But he doesn't want to become that person just to succeed. And
I think that's a cool choice.
And walking out of the movie, I didn't get that because it's buried. This movie has a lot of layers and it's really layered. And until you start peeling away those layers and understanding them and digesting them, you don't get that. I dare anyone to see the movie once and 5 minutes after walking out of this movie, get that from the movie.
Right.
If you are, then you are somebody who studies symbolism and was seeing stuff as it was coming up on screen, because it took a couple of days of digesting this movie for me to really see how deep the movie was, and really only now discussing it with you on here, you know, here on,
yeah, you're right,
on the recording.
You're exactly right.
I'm still formulating the whole thought.
Yeah, exactly. The whole Catcher in the Rye thing. Yeah, that just happened like 5 minutes ago.
Right. Exactly.
So
exactly.
You know what? This movie's actually getting better as we talk about it.
it's kind of like Michael Clayton in that.
Yeah. You robbed me of my rage.
You were prepared to make a stand that this movie sucked, and I've robbed I've stolen that moment from you.
You know, I do kind of wonder though, I wonder if that's actually my opinion of it, or like, am I just enjoying the discussion about it? Because there are movies that I hate that I like to discuss.
Sure, sure.
Like the original Rollerball, I hated that movie so much. I love talking about it.
It's been a long time since I've seen the original Rollerball.
Yeah, me too, and I'm happy for that.
But. Yeah.
What was I going to bring up? Oh, Woody Harrelson. Was that like the biggest joke part? What? Like, he shows up, he does some talking, and then it done kills him 5 minutes later.
Yeah. You know what? I think that just shows. I mean, for me, it was it showed how well respected Anton was in the community of badasses.
Whatever community that was.
Yeah. in the guild of dickheads. that they brought this other guy in to do it. And I mean, they pretty much showed you that he was good at what he did. He found Llewellyn very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's and apparently quicker than Anton did.
Right.
For being way behind the eight ball on the whole process. He figured out right where Llewellyn was, and he was really after Anton.
Right. Well, I think the only reason he found him so quickly was because Anton and Llewellyn both hurt at that point.
Like, that is true.
Llewellyn had to go to a hospital, and Anton was like performing surgery on himself because he was so injured.
Yes, that is true.
He had that advantage that he had the advantage of time and not being all messed up.
Right. Yeah, you have a point there. Other than that, you know, I'm still not quite sure the point of that character, and maybe it's going to take another viewing or two to really get it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I feel there was a deeper purpose to him there, and maybe it was just to show just how brutal Anton was.
Yeah,
but I didn't need that at that point. I mean, I knew how brutal he was.
Yeah,
I had a pretty good idea. I mean, it's like you don't need him to stomp on a kitten after you've seen him, you know, gut a puppy. It's not. And, I mean, those are just examples. That doesn't really happen in this movie. They didn't.
Like he's walking upstairs, and then he turns around, and Anton's behind him, and he's like, "Oh hell,
yeah,"
because he knows.
Oh yeah, he knows. He knew.
Great.
So, really, the only other purpose he served was to basically to piss off Anton. So he went after the guy who was paying him.
Yes, that was hilarious.
And, yeah, I mean, as far as the philosophical meaning behind the character, I really don't know if there was any more to it than that. Maybe there was, and I just haven't got that far yet. But
I don't know. I didn't really get...
I doubt it. I just doubt it at this point, just considering the rest of the pieces and the way they seem to fit together. There doesn't seem to be a missing piece that he would fill.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Maybe it'll come to me when I think about this more, and maybe later in the discussion. Woo!
Woo.
But yeah, I didn't really get the sense that he. I almost thought that it was like a bit part, and they only threw him in there because he was a big name. And there had to be more to it than that. I mean, the rest of the movie was. There were parts about it that I didn't enjoy, but to say that it wasn't well thought out is inaccurate.
Yes.
So he had to have served some purpose. I just don't know what that is.
Right. Yeah.
Which is annoying.
Yeah, and I mean, it almost makes me want to go back and watch it again just to digest that part a little more and see if some bit of wisdom can be gained. I don't know. I don't know. It's like reading tea leaves or something.
Jim Morris leaves?
Yes. He would have an answer. We should Skype him in. See if he's seen the movie and see if he knows the answer to this cosmic question that we have. And if anybody hasn't figured it out yet, we're not in the same room.
Yeah.
This is the first time you and I have done this where we are recording not in the same room.
Yeah.
Wicked storms came through earlier and it just wasn't probably a bright idea to be driving.
It was not looking all that appealing.
Yeah. Especially at one point, I wasn't we'd even be able to record via Skype because the rain was pounding so hard on the windows it sounded like hail. So it was fun. At least the thunder has stopped. At least the thunder has stopped. That's good.
Yeah, that's very good. It freaks out my cats.
Oh, yeah. It would be nice ambiance for the recording, though, every once in a while to have some rolling thunder come through.
Yeah, if we were doing a horror movie, that'd be awesome.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Set the mood.
One of the other things I thought was kind of interesting about the character was that he seemed very focused and he seemed to have a code. And I think that's kind of why I'm relating him back to the character from Serenity, from the agent, you know, executioner, whatever he was, from Serenity. He had a code and if he made a promise, he kept it. Including, I promise to kill you. You know, if you...
Yeah, that whole scene was weird.
At the end of the movie? With the...
Yeah, with the wife?
Yes, yes. And his hold on. That whole dialogue was just very creepy.
It was. Wait, do you think he killed him?
Who killed what?
Do you think Anton killed the wife?
Absolutely.
So I think he did.
I think he killed her.
I got the distinct impression that... Like, when they were talking, it's not that she changed his mind, but she was speaking to him, like, on his level. I don't know. I got this weird vibe from that whole conversation. Almost like...
It felt like it could have gone either way, but I think he killed her. I don't know.
He probably did, but I don't know. The way they set up the conversation, I don't think they would have set it up so ambiguously. If he was just going to kill her. Like, I think that if they had set it up, because they did not at any point in the movie have any compunctions about showing him killing people.
That's true. That is true.
And so I think that if they were going to imply that he killed her, they would have just shown him killing her.
Well, he just would have done it. They didn't show every death, though, either. Like, there was the, at the hotel that...
The hotel attendant?
The hotel attendant. We see later that the hotel attendant's dead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see him alive, and then we see the footfalls outside the door and that whole thing. But, you know, it's only after the fact that we realize that, yes, the hotel attendant is dead.
Right.
So yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure looking back. I think just from what we saw at that point in the movie, I thought she was dead. It'll be interesting to see.
I think I'm just kind of hoping that she's not dead.
And you know, and maybe that was kind of the way they framed it, the way they did, was just to give you a little bit of hope that maybe she didn't die, to give you that spark. And then as he's leaving, we have the
car accident.
The car accident with a compound fracture.
It's like, dude.
Your bones sticking out.
Those kids were great.
Yes, they were.
Dude, you have bones sticking out of your arm. Then he starts walking away. He's like, dude, $20 is that $100's mine.
Yeah.
You still have your shirt.
Yeah, those kids were good. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure how the movie was going to end. And
yeah, neither did I.
Then it kept ending.
Yeah.
It did. It almost did the Lord of the Rings thing where, you know, oh, there's the end. Wait, no. Oh, there's the end. No, that's not quite the end yet. And then it did. It ended. It just kind of stopped.
Let's see, what else?
I think I hit the points of discussion that I really had that I can think of.
I will say that maybe 45 minutes of the movie, the assistant to Tommy Lee Jones, Dirk Dillahunt, that guy is in The 4400, of which I am an avid fan of the TV show.
Yes.
And so, I don't know, for 45 minutes, it was a game that I was playing with Melina. I'm like, we've seen that guy before. What was he in?
Were you taunting her with that?
Yeah, I was. I'm like,
that's great.
Oh, man, it's a show we watch. Sci-fi.
Julie and I play that game every once in a while, too.
Yeah. I love playing that game.
Yeah. She does it with me with her People magazine. She'll hand me a picture and like cover up the caption. Who is this? This person without makeup on who looks frazzled. I don't care. At which point she throws the magazine at me. But oh well. Yeah, this movie was a different one. This is not a date movie.
No.
This is not a feel-good movie.
It's just like Catcher in the Rye. I think Catcher in the Rye was an excellent book, and I think it's probably the closest kind of... I think J.D. Salinger did a great job capturing what it's like to be an adolescent male.
Yeah.
Making that transition, and mm-hmm. then kind of looking back and realizing that my life was not what I thought it was. And where my life is going isn't even close to where I thought it was going to be.
Exactly.
And it's kind of exactly what this movie... And then even Tommy Lee Jones, when he's talking to that other old-time sheriff from that other town.
Right.
They're talking, and the guy's like, oh, I would have known that kids had green hair and pierced lips and blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that is the exact mentality. It's like almost... The entire message of the story, that old guy is just spouting out over coffee or whatever.
Yeah, it's that ending. Mm-hmm. It's the ending after the Hollywood ending, because the Hollywood ending might have happened when he got to the hotel,
right?
Or after Llewellyn's mother-in-law, who's a crabby old bitch.
Yeah, that chick was awesome.
She was great.
Yeah,
very well acted as the crabby old bitch.
Whenever like Llewellyn and his wife would be talking, and she's like, "Oh, well, what about my mama?" He's like, "Don't worry,
yeah,
she'll be fine."
Yeah, you know, was it going to be after her death, and then after the visit from Anton, and then it ends back up with Tommy Lee Jones and that other old sheriff. And the whole point of the movie was really kind of tied up in that conversation.
Yep.
And at that point, I think a lot of the disappointment from a lot of people I heard from the movie was that they weren't paying attention at that point anymore. And if you weren't paying attention there, when the movie did end, it's like, what the hell just happened? You know what?
You know what? I'm that guy. I'm totally that guy. Who, seriously, most of my insight on this movie has come not from having watched the movie, but this discussion right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, I just like the movie, but I love the discussion about it. So.
Yeah, you know, I think this movie is one of those kind of movies that they'll talk about in film classes and in like screenwriting stuff. Because I think there's a lot there, and I think there's a lot that can be learned from this and from this style and from the way they layered it out and the way they gave you just enough information to move the story they were trying to tell along, but also the plot of this cat and mouse chase with the cat and mouse and dog aspect too of it. That really wasn't what the story was about. It really wasn't the point of the movie, but it kept you involved so that they could illustrate their points to get you to the point of understanding what they were trying to say.
Yeah, definitely.
Which would have made no sense if I would have said that at the beginning of this discussion. And I probably would not have been able to elucidate it as well had I not have already had, you know, a half a glass of scotch.
Well, I think that it's really cool that the conclusion that you've drawn is a result of the conversation about the movie, not a result of watching the movie itself.
Yeah, and I mean, this is just my take
because
on
anything
it.
That,
I mean, I'll be completely honest. This is my take on it. And I don't know if that's really the intention. And to be honest, I think other people can get completely different takes out of this movie. I think that's going to be the beauty of this film, is hearing other people's opinions on it. And mm-hmm. by all means, if you have more opinions on this, please let us know. I know other people have seen this movie and have said that they really enjoy it. If you really enjoy it, you're obviously getting something out of it.
Right.
And Jay, I'm talking to you because you told me that, that you enjoyed this movie. So, I mean, and I know some other people that have said that too. So, you know, by all means, if you're getting things out of this, you know, confirm that what I'm getting makes sense or, you know, or not, or maybe it's making something, you know, it's telling a different story to you. And I'd be fascinated to hear that. I really would. Cause I'm just one guy who's drinking scotch and talking about a movie. I don't claim anything other than that.
That's great.
So, yeah, I mean, by all means, I want to hear if other people have other opinions about this flick. I want to know about them because I think this movie has a lot to be discussed about in the future. And
I think so. And I would love to get almost a bigger discussion going on it.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, both of us have our own perspectives on it, but like just like you said, we're only two people, and I am sure that there is stuff that we should have noticed or that we did notice and we just forgot to bring up that I would love to revisit at some point.
Right, and both of us have only seen the movie once. I mean, I know there's people that have seen this movie more than once, especially now that it's out on DVD.
I bet watching it again now, the movie would be a lot different for me.
Right.
Only based on this discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. And I think I would watch the movie now looking for the clues to see if the conclusions that I'm drawing from what I saw in the movie, to see if all of that held up. If everything they showed me throughout the course of the movie held up to that point that I think the movie was trying to make. And if it didn't, maybe there's something more there that I just didn't see, and that wasn't the point that they were trying to make, and I've been talking out of my ass for the last 25 minutes, which has happened before.
You're a podcaster. Yes. I only speak out of my ass.
We have two microphones for just that case. That's what these big condenser mics are for. You get all the sound in the room.
Podcasting.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, on that note.
See ya.
Yeah. I really don't have anything to add to the discussion about this movie. I think I'm done talking about it for tonight. Unless you've got something more to add.
No. I agree with you.
All right.
It's going to be interesting to see how my opinions change on it in the next day, because I didn't like it last night,
mm-hmm.
but thinking about it, my opinions changed. And now having this discussion, my opinions changed over the course of this discussion. So it'll be interesting thinking about the movie in the context of this discussion and seeing how much it changes. That'll be fascinating.
Well, and then probably even, you know, if it changes again in a couple of days when you go through the editing process and you have the opportunity to listen to this discussion again.
Exactly.
And get even more out of it. So,
the genie might make an appearance.
Ooh, we haven't heard from the genie in a while. So I'm going to go ahead and list out all the good ways to contact us because I think for this movie, it is important. And I really do want to hear something from somebody.
Yes.
I think we could really have a good discussion about this. I think a movie like this could really frame a feedback show. And if anybody has seen Stay or Gone Baby Gone, we could have a really good discussion about a couple of really good movies that are discussion worthy at this point. So
if you haven't seen Stay, go see it. It's good.
Yeah, Stay is good. Gone Baby Gone is the, except for the whole, you know, accent. Getting past the accent thing.
It was good beyond that.
Yeah, that's what subtitles are for. hey, we watch BC America TV stuff, so Julie always has the subtitles on with those.
I can't disagree. I cannot understand a British accent to save my life.
Yeah. And what's funny is BBC America, if you watch BBC America, they actually even tell you, you know, sometimes even people in Britain can't understand each other because the accents are so varied. So
nice.
Don't feel ashamed. I mean, they actually tell you, don't feel ashamed to turn on the subtitles. That's hilarious. So how you can get a hold of us, you, of course, can email us, tony@fanboysmackdown.com, adam@fanboysmackdown.com. If you want something to come to both of us, just fanboysmackdown@gmail.com is the old standby. I still get all those. Comments on the site, absolutely welcome. You can click right on the episode. At the bottom, you can leave comments on it. If you want to, we've got the Farpoint Forums at farpointforums.com. You can leave messages there. We try to get out there and create a new thread for every episode so that you can comment directly on those episodes. So far, most of those episodes only have the "here's the thread that you can post in" link. So if anybody wants to comment in those, they're more than welcome. we also have the voicemail line, 618-207-4747. And let's see, if you have the capability, if you want to send us an audio commentary that you don't feel like picking up the phone for, if you have microphone or even a mic and like a laptop or headset mic, just put it together, send us the MP3, and, you know, hopefully we'll start getting some good feedback. If we get a good grouping of feedback, we'll probably just have a feedback show at some point in the future where we clump all the feedback together and have a little discussion about what you guys are thinking also.
Yeah, so, definitely. So, I would love to do something like that because, I mean, some of the responses from Gone Baby Gone and this movie, I would definitely like to revisit those topics.
Yes, absolutely. I absolutely agree, 100%. That said, make sure you get out and get a copy of Scott Sigler's Infected. Also, come back and check the website after April the 1st. We will have more contests. We've got at least two contests lined up and another big one that's just kind of waiting and lurking. It is coming. Actually, we actually have a phenomenal contest lined up for July, which is really early that we're talking about this, but we do have something coming up that it could be very cool and could be it's worth waiting for. I'll just say that it is worth waiting for.
And don't forget to check out T. Morris.
Yes,
at tmorris.com.
tmorris.com.
Moravi.net.
Yeah, moravi.net, tmorris.com.
I'm listening.
Yes.
Sure, at some point once I get all the way caught up, I'd love to have a discussion about it just because.
Sure. And we can wait till the very end and talk about it, you know, as a complete work as well.
Oh, is he not done with the remastered yet?
No, he is still doing remastered. It is not done yet.
Oh, damn. I'm going to have to slow down.
I think chapter 8 is coming out like this week. Now, keep in mind these chapters, he starts breaking them out into 2 and 3 parts.
Yeah. So like, I've got the 3-part chapters.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah. I think part 7 is a 3-parter. Chapter 7, I should say, I think is a 3-parter. Though, and I'm curious, I haven't looked, but at one point, patiobooks.com had the full run of Moravi from the first time T had podcasted. So you don't get the varying voices, you don't get the extra sound effects, But you would be able to have the full run if you get caught up and you get antsy.
Oh! Is that the difference between the remastered and the regular version?
Yes.
Just the sound effects and the voices?
Yes. Well, and I think he's added a few more scenes in there, too.
Yeah, because I know he's put some scenes back in. I didn't know that the voices... Because I can't really imagine... Like, the chick who does Ascana?
Mm-hmm.
I can't really imagine her not doing Ascana.
Oh, it's T doing Ascana.
In the original?
In the original.
I may pop in and check that out, but...
And T is an actor. Does Ascana, I mean, T is trained as an actor. So, I mean, he does the voices, and he does them well. But Philippa Ballantyne, who does...
Yeah, her.
Yeah,
she's awesome,
and her voice is awesome. And actually, the day that this releases, her new patio book is set to launch.
Really?
Chasing the Bard. She's already got one called Weaver's Web, and I listened to that. It's really good. But she's got a new one that's launching. It's a book that she's had out for a while, and it's... And I'm trying to... The premise is kind of interesting. It's the Fae, the fairies... are trying to get their stories told through William Shakespeare. Nice. William Shakespeare is a character in her story. And guess who's playing Will in her story?
Well, T. Morris, actually?
Absolutely. Yes.
You know,
yes.
I didn't know last week when we had T. Morris on that he was going to get me like hooked on this. He's like a crack dealer.
Yes, he is.
First, he started me off easy with weed, and then he's moved me on to like heroin. Mm. And the patio books are going to be, they're going to consume my life.
You know, you haven't even got into Scott Sigler stuff yet. And I think for you being a Stephen King freak, I really think you'll get into Siggy's stuff. I really think you'll dig his stuff because his stuff is more on the horror bend, but it's got the hard sci-fi along with it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I think I would definitely to you recommend Infected to give that a listen. It's a story about this guy named Perry Fossey, who was a former football player. He was injured, and now he basically is just working, living out his life. He's got some anger management issues. He's had some problems. Well, this infection hits, and basically it's a living virus, and these triangles appear under your skin. And it's interesting, and you can see these triangles like sprouting arms and growing under your skin, and then they start talking, and they look at you. There's an eyeball grows out of it, and it's looking at you, and then it takes over your body and like forces you to go out and kill people and things like that. Well, the thing is, with Perry, he's enough of a hardhead and a badass that he's decided he's going to fight back from these things that are inside him and does things like stabbing himself to get at the triangles. And it is twisted. It is messed up. And I recommend this one. This is the one, this is the book that is coming out on April 1st. But you can actually get it right now. He's podcasting it, giving it away for free. So,
yeah, I definitely see myself getting sucked into the patio books.
Oh yeah, there's some really good stuff. There is some really good stuff. So we've had a lot of outro here. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. Or the episode's going to be as long as it was last week with T. He tends to bring out the length in the episodes. So yes, please get back with us. Oh, next week we're going to talk about Mr. Stephen King, The Mist.
Excellent.
Yes. So we're going to be talking about The Mist, and actually that's going to be one of the giveaways for the month of April. So We're going to talk about that more. We'll talk about that when we talk about the movie. So the movie is, I think it is now available on DVD.
I believe so.
So check that out. And if you haven't seen it in the theater, check it out on DVD. And we are going to be talking about it next week. And until then, see you guys.
T. Morris is a drug dealer, and his drug of choice is Moravia.